fear is not logical. It's primal. You are not going to get rid of fear. So you are still going to feel that cue of fear. But what we'd like to do is train you, teach you, learn how to feel the cue of fear and instead go into a courage-based habit.
Your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. This is the Building Psychological Strength podcast, where we explore ways to build resilience, build confidence, and make our minds work in our favor. We draw from the fields of psychology and life design to help us intentionally create a rock-solid mindset upon which a vibrant life experience can be built. My name is April Seifert. I'm a psychologist, a life design strategist, and co-founder of Peak Mind, the Center for Psychological Strength. Each week, I'll introduce you to an expert, a concept, a technique, or a hands-on practice that will help you build psychological strength in your own life. These are the tools to help you thrive. Hey, everybody. Happy Wednesday, and welcome back to this episode of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. My name is April Seifert, and I'm your host, and this week's episode is incredible. I'm losing my mind about how excited I am for you all to hear this week's episode. This week, you are going to hear from an amazing woman named Kate Swoboda. She has spent the last 13 years of her career in the life coaching field. Now, there's a range of people who go into life coaching, and they have a range of, you know, different specialties and that type of thing. But when I think about the expertise that Kate has and how beautifully it aligns with everything that we're doing within Peak Mind and within, you know, building psychological strength within this community, I'm just thrilled that we were able to have the conversation that we had. Kate is actually the author of an incredible book called The Courage Habit, and that is what we're diving into today in her interview. In particular, you are going to get to hear from her about the fear responses that we typically have, so things like perfectionism and self-sabotage and people-pleasing. She'll get into so much more depth around that, but we're going to talk a lot about what our typical response to fear is. And then she's going to give some incredibly practical and actionable tips about how you can transfer that fear response into something that she calls the courage habit. So, how can you use slightly different behaviors and a very specific set of behaviors that she's going to go through? There's four. How can you use those four behaviors and those four responses to condition yourself to move from a place of courage instead of staying stuck when you start to experience fear? This interview is so incredibly powerful, and I am so thrilled that we had the chance to chat with Kate, and I know you are going to get so much out of this interview. All right, I'm not going to talk anymore because I want you guys to dive in and hear this incredible information from Kate. Kate, I'm so excited for our conversation, and I am so thrilled that you are joining us today. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So I am really thrilled to chat with you because your area of expertise and your topic of interest around courage is something that I think really hits on a number of levels for people. It's something that comes into play daily in our lives, whether we realize it or not. It comes into play in our relationships and in our careers and in any other type of goal or endeavor we may chase after. And so I'm really excited about that. Just to give my audience a little bit of background on you, you have an incredible history in the area of coaching, which is awesome. And I see as such an amazing complement to the work that, you know, say my co-founder in Peak Mind, Ashley, does as a therapist. They work so hand in hand. And so I love that work. And I love talking to people who have a deep history in it and a lot of expertise in it. And you are actually a published author as well. You wrote a book called The Courage Habit. So I feel like we just have a ton of value and a ton of knowledge to get out of you in this episode. So I'm just really excited to dive in.
Oh, me too. Yeah, we get to geek out together on all this stuff.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so tell us a little bit about the work you do. Tell us a bit about how you got into coaching and the types of people you work with and just what you focus on.
Well, I think the work I do is really about looking at how fear holds us back and how to work with that in a really human way and step into more courage. And for me, courage is really about emotional resilience, because emotional resilience is when you make mistakes, you are not perfect, you are feeling fear, yet you are resilient. You are getting back up. You're going in again. You are saying, what is there for me to learn here? How can I be real about the pain that I feel at the same time that I go, I've got a vision or a dream or a place that I want to move into, and I need to keep making progress of some kind towards that vision. And how I got into the work was I had another job that was just not very fulfilling. There were parts of it that were fulfilling. And in fact, I was very much that like kind of prototypical type A overachiever person who had dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's, followed exactly the career ladder to have that job, and was poised for success in that job as a result of all the moves and choices I'd made. And what threw me off actually was this day that was just so unexpected to me. We were sitting in a meeting. And I don't know why it was this day. And at the time it was like, you know, totally, I was not into the touchy feely self-help stuff, or that's what I would have called it at the time. And I'm sitting in this meeting and suddenly it just was like as clear as day, I don't want to do this anymore. And so here you go. You've got this person who has worked really hard, been privileged enough to have gotten to exactly where she wanted to go. I, at the time, had thought I'd been making all the decisions that I had wanted to make. And suddenly it was just like this, it was like a nagging headache that couldn't be ignored. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. I've done all this work to get here, and somehow I've gotten here and this isn't what I want to do. And then there was this kind of like panic and really identity terror, because it was like, who am I even? Because all my best thinking got me right here. So how do I trust myself to pivot? How do I trust myself to do anything different? And at first, that journey of trying to figure out where I was going next was laden with most of the same moves I'd already been making, which was trying to be uber logical and set a goal and then move towards the goal. But it was like just getting me stuck in the exact same places I had been. And that led me to the realization that I actually was trying to make it look pretty while I was doing it. I was in this perfectionistic pattern, trying to make it look good, trying to do it right. And that was the thing that was hobbling me the entire time. So I actually needed to be willing to be afraid. And the paradox was that in the willingness to be afraid, I was less controlled by fear. In the willingness to get curious about what I was so afraid of, I was less under its thumb. And that was really revelatory for me. And then then the circuitous route of trying different things and realizing, life coaching is actually what makes my heart sing. And if I were willing to work with the fear of what if I can't make money doing this, or what if I'm not very good, or what are other people going to think? Because, you know, I had invested a lot in my other career. What are people going to think? Life coach? What is that? You know, so it was this time of incredible fear and panic, and also curiosity and delight, and kind of feeling like I was taking off something that I'd been carrying around for far too long that was very heavy. And then we get into one-on-one practice, and then we get into developing programs, and then we get into group coaching, and then we get into, now I'm the director of a life coach training program, and I train other people, and I geek out on the psychology of courage and write books on habit formation and how you can look at your fear-based habits and interrupt those and change those to create courage-based habits. And you know, here we are today. Then I get to talk with awesome people like you about the journey.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. One thing that I want to ask you about your own personal experience, because my guess is this will be the experience of a lot of people. You were mentioning in that moment when you looked around and you said, I don't want to do this anymore. And you mentioned that up until that point, what you realized is that you were trying to do things perfectly. You were trying to, you know, make sure that outward facade looked really good when, and here's kind of the direction I'm going. Did you feel like in retrospect that that concern that you had for looking good, for looking perfect, how did that hold you back? I'm not even going to ask you if it did, because I think that it goes without saying that that holds us back. But how did you find that that held you back? Like, what would you have done that you weren't doing because you were afraid that you might not look perfect? Does that question make sense? I feel like I rambled a bit, but...
Well, we can unpack it a bit, like, as I'm answering, like, what, yeah, I really like how you put it, of like, what would you have done that you were afraid? I mean, you know, anything, it's kind of funny that we're talking about this now because we had a little pre-session talk where we kind of touched on this. I mean, actually, I wanted anything with a credential. I found security in the world of credentials. I found security in the world of advanced degrees. I found security in the world of what you know, being in a room and being able to go, I'm smart and I can play off of my smarts and I can use my smarts to leverage things. And I found security in logic. I mean, you know, it, I don't think it's an accident that around the time that I started to have this kind of, I mean, I could call it an unraveling, but I don't mean it in the way people typically do. People typically, when they say unraveling, they mean like totally having a breakdown. And when I say unraveling, I just mean there were all these kind of knots that I had knotted myself. You know, I'd tied one knot when I said, this is the degree I want. And tied another knot when I said, this is the job I want. And I'd tied another knot when I, you know, it's like, so I kept tying these knots and I just had to unravel my own knots. And it was super scary because, I mean, again, with this metaphor of security, a knot is something that you can grip, you know. I had to release the grip. And I don't think it's an accident that around this time I got into reading about Buddhism, Zen Buddhism, Pema Chodron, the terrifying title of her book, When Things Fall Apart, which I recommend to people, you know, like things had to fall apart a little bit. And that was the thing that I was most unwilling to do. And, you know, at the time that I made this shift, I was 25, 26 years old. And, you know, when I first began moving into life coaching in particular, it was, well, who are you to be a life coach? You're so young, you know?
Oh, so like, I had that same hang up, by the way. That was like, that was my inner critic person. That person always told me, you're too young. No one will take you seriously. And it wasn't until I looked around and realized that I'm almost 40 years old and I still feel that way that I realized how dumb that was. But keep going. I totally interrupted.
Well, no, it's totally fine because, I mean, nobody says you're too young to be an accountant. Nobody says you're too young to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. Nobody, you know, like, and this therein lies the safety of the credential, right? Like, people don't understand that life coaching is actually a skill set that requires training, practice, and beginner's mind and humbleness. I mean, you know, one of the things that I think is so important is to continuously be learning. And I love learning. And that's the piece that's so hard. I had an entire identity that was frankly built on my achievements, my credentials. And I think that when we get caught in identity systems, and by identity system, I mean any kind of, I define myself by my job or my role or, you know, things like that and all the things that go with it. We really put ourselves into these kind of boxes and we don't even realize that we're doing it because it feels good. In the short term, it feels good to be able to go, here's who I am, you know, and it's a lot harder and requires a lot more courage to go, you know what, I don't know who I am. Mm. And I can sit here right now and I can, you know, it's like if you asked me right now, what is it about yourself, you know, that you know is true? most of what I would probably turn to answer that question would be saying something along the lines of the values that I turn to again and again. The who of who I am is different today than it was when I was 25, when I was 30, when I was 35. Now I'm knocking on the door of 40. So who I am, the who, the kind of like what I like or what I gravitate towards or kind of how I respond to things, those are fluid. But the who that is stable is the core at my core is turning to the values. So, you know, these are the things that can be kind of the security that you can recreate for yourself. That's a lot healthier form of security, I think, than the external stuff. Here's how much money I make or where I live or my political affiliation or the job I hold or I'm a mother or I'm a wife or I'm, you know, and it's a lot richer journey. It's also a harder journey, though. I mean, there are absolutely times where still today, you know, I'm very much into a non-guru methodology. I think anyone who tries to sell you on becoming fearless is lying. They are trying to sell you something. There is no fearless, but there is your fear happens and then you work with it as it comes up and you have this really human dance with, I'm totally effing scared right now. But I'm going to move forward anyway, because that's my value system, because that's what's required here, because that's the opportunity / challenge that is put before me.
That is incredible. I want to go there next. I want to go like directly at the heart of the work that you do, because that was just the perfect turning point. It's this notion of there is no such thing as being fearless. And I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. It isn't that, you know, we aren't hardwired as human beings to be fearless. That would be the most evolutionarily reckless thing ever. Like, yes. We wouldn't have survived. So it's learning how to move forward in spite of it, learning how to sit with it, learning how, like, when you should trust it and when you should push it, that I think is really the art to it. And I'm just so excited about your particular area of expertise. Can you just give us the overview of what you mean by the courage habit? Because that is a really specific and very nuanced notion and way to think about courage. So tell us what you mean by the courage habit.
Okay. So people, when they think of habits, they think of things like remembering to brush their teeth or going to the gym at the same time every day. But what they don't often realize is that psychologically, and this bears out in the research, everything that I talk about in my work, I pay homage to the people who have come before me. I'm not a clinical researcher, but I'm taking what they have researched and found and amalgamating it and seeing what the practical application is for people's lives. So these are not like brand new ideas invented by me. This is me saying, here's the working theory that I see bearing out. So psychologically, there are behavioral habits that we are engaging with all the time and we don't even realize it. How you behave when you're in an argument with your partner, that is a behavioral habit. This is why you keep having the same argument about the dishwasher, even though it's, you know, and like how it should be loaded, right? Even though it's a different year, okay? Because the same behavioral habits and impulses and responses to conflict are playing out on a habitual level, unconsciously. And the same thing happens with our fear. When we feel cues of fear, we go into one of four, and sometimes more, but usually one's a bigger hook, one of four predominant fear patterns, and they are perfectionism, people-pleasing, pessimism, or self-sabotage. So we feel a cue of fear, and this is what's happening in the brain. We go into a routine that is a fear-based pattern. That routine is a response to the cue of fear. And that routine is designed to get us to the reward. And people might go, what do you mean reward? I mean, pessimism is not very rewarding. But to a part of the brain called the basal ganglia, which is very, you know, highly important for habit formation, the basal ganglia is just, if I can personify the basal ganglia, and I always, you know, neurosurgeons, I'm sorry, I know this is getting very simplified and reductive. The basal ganglia.
There's probably only like one or two of them listening, so go ahead and offend them. Yeah, I'm just kidding.
I always worry about demeaning their work. I'm not trying to take very complex things like how the brain works and put them into like these overly simplified examples to diminish what you do. So bow down before the brain surgeons here. But basically, the basal ganglia, its role in habit formation is to take the stimuli coming at us at all times and go, what do I do with this? The basal ganglia, the brain, does not like stress. It does not like encountering things it doesn't know what to do with. That's why we're constantly using existing schemas to figure out how to handle things. So when you feel that cue of fear, the basal ganglia is going, what do I do with this? Well, let's see. Last time you were really intimidated by the idea of changing jobs, you went into perfectionism mode, which got you the short-term reward of feeling like you were in control. Much better than this, oh my God, who am I even? You know, let's go into perfectionism. Let's start goal setting and, which is the example I described at the top of our call today, which is, all about trying to be like Little Miss Perfect and make it look good. Sometimes people, in response to their fear, go into people pleasing. Somebody wants to write a book, maybe. They feel fear about what it'll take to write that book. And then they go into people pleasing. You know what? My kids are so young. It's not the right time. I would take so much time away from my job if I took a little time off to work, and that gets you to that short-term reward of decreasing stress. That's the big thing to understand, is that when it's a short-term reward of decreasing stress, you lose the longer-term gain of being able to build resilience. So here's where the courage habit comes in. You are not going to get rid of fear. So you are still going to feel that cue of fear. But what we'd like to do is train you, teach you, learn how to feel the cue of fear and instead go into a courage-based habit, a habit that builds your resilience so that you can get the longer-term reward of being able to meet those challenges that you feel and still keep moving forward. And instead of perfectionism, people-pleasing, pessimism, self-sabotage as fear-based routines, we want you to step into courage-based routines. And those, as borne out by the research, are accessing the body, listening without attachment to what your fear is saying. Listening, just don't get attached. Reframe limiting stories. And reaching out and creating community. So if you can teach yourself, and the good news is anyone who has ever broken a habit and replaced it with another one, you already know how to do this. You know how. It's not easy, but you know how. You feel the cue of fear, and instead of going into a fear pattern, you interrupt that. You go, oh, hold on a second. I'm starting to go into pessimism, or I'm starting to go into perfectionism. Let me slow down and access the body, or let me listen without attachment, or let me reframe limiting stories, or let me reach out and create community. That's how you deconstruct fear-based habits and create what I call the courage habit.
This episode of the Building Psychological Strength podcast is sponsored by the Peak Mind Starter Pack. If you're ready to start building psychological strength, you can get started absolutely free. Begin building psychological strength with a set of hands-on mini modules designed to create massive shifts. Inside the starter pack, you'll get access to three different modules. Module one is the self-identity diagnostic, which will give you an insightful boost in self-awareness. Module number two is life blueprinting, a powerful introduction to the field of life design. And module three is a simple mindset hack that'll help you cut down on unnecessary anxiety, anger, and guilt. Once you're enrolled in the starter pack, you can go at your own pace. And we've made it absolutely free because we want as many people as possible to benefit from this work. Your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. What choice are you making? You have nothing to lose and mental toughness, resilience, and confidence to gain. Get started for free today by visiting www.peakmindpsychology.com and get enrolled in the Peak Mind Starter Pack. That is so powerful. That's so incredibly powerful. And something that I want to make sure people get out of this, because this feels really fundamental to understanding just how powerful what you said is. When you think about any goal, really any goal, and I'm going to use this example of downhill snow skiing from when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I would go to the ski place that was close to where I lived. And I remember at one point someone told me, you know, I was trying to get better at skiing and I was plateauing out. There was only, you know, I could only go down a run that was of a certain complexity and I wasn't getting any better. And this person said, if you're not falling once in a while, you're not pushing yourself hard enough. And they don't mean completely falling and breaking bones, but they mean like I would go, you know, a dozen times to ski and I wouldn't fall. And that meant that I was staying on runs and was skiing in a way that was well inside my ability level. And that's not how you get better. You get better when you start to push that limit of what your ability level is. And that's when you start to stumble and fall, right? It's when you're really not good at something that you start to push that limit of what your ability level is. And it, the same goes, and that same analogy goes in everything else. So you feel that fear, right? I would start going faster than I would normally ski, and I would feel that fear, and I would immediately retreat back and slow myself down. That's not how you get better, right? And so in the same way, exactly what you're saying, if you want to go for a bigger job or you want to strive for a bigger goal or you actually want to understand where your real potential is, because your real potential is nowhere near that comfort zone you're in. It just isn't. But if you actually want to understand where your real potential is, you're going to have to do, and this is why I'm like pounding on the table and on this soapbox right now, you're going to have to do what Kate's saying. You're going to have to learn how to feel that fear and keep going anyway, because otherwise you're never going to push that limit and you're never going to get better.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's so many arenas for this and, you know, that are even outside of, you so get it. That example is so perfect. It's like, I look at like relationships, because how people argue and how they handle conflict is often so entrenched by the time they get into a long-term partnership, like a marriage. And it's like, you know, people have asked me before, well, hold on a second. I keep having the same argument with my partner and then I get a pot shot in. And then like, what's the reward in that? You know, that's not a reward. But it is, because in that moment, you might momentarily feel more in control. Or just, it can be as simple as in that moment, it's what's comfortable for you to get a pot shot in. Maybe you had 20 years of watching your parents do it before you ever got into a relationship with anyone. And that wires your neurons, it wires your psychology. And the big thing, though, that is important to understand is that this is changeable stuff. You know, it is not just because you have experienced trauma, you will always experience trauma. It is not just because you were afraid of something last year, you will always be afraid. It is not just because this is what you, this is a growth mindset. And if you decide, I want to be a more patient person, or I want to get better at handling money, or I want to do something really physical. I mean, CrossFit is, you know, as you were talking about downhill skiing, CrossFit is my thing. And like, you know, yesterday I was at the gym doing a power clean and, you know, it's like I was dropping the barbell. I could not get it all the way up on with the weight that I was at. But, I, you know, when I first started CrossFit, I couldn't even get a 15-pound barbell up. So attempting 85 pounds yesterday is a good thing for me.
It's a pretty big deal.
I'm happy with that. It's a big deal to me. So it's that thing of, you know, you are going to fall down, and that's very human. And one of the huge misconceptions that can easily happen for people when they hear me break down the fear patterns and the courage habit and all that is that somebody might go, this is so great. Yes, I'm a classic people pleaser. I'm going to stop that. I'm going to stop it right now. Next time I feel afraid, I'm going to go straight into accessing the body or reaching it. And it's like, no, how it's probably actually going to happen is that you're going to feel the cue of fear, go into people pleasing, and be, you know, five yeses in when you really want to say no, when you're going to go, oh shit, you know what?
I did it again. Yep.
I said yes to that. I should have said no, you know, and the component parts of the courage habit, which are all backed by multiple psychotherapeutic modalities, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, narrative therapy, dialectical behavior therapy, all kinds of stuff like that. Research that's been done, across different populations, addicts, people with eating disorders, people with anxiety and depression. You know, these are very human tools. And I think that they are tools that, you know, if we're lucky, we see them modeled. If we're lucky, we have parents who slow down and access the body. If we are lucky, we have parents who encourage us to reach out and lean on one another. But a lot of us grow in families where it's like, you made a mistake, you're in trouble, you shouldn't have done that. There's no time for pausing and accessing the body and taking a breath. Or we've got families where when there's conflict, people isolate instead of connect. And so it really is going to be a learning process, and it's going to be a hard one at the beginning. But to me, why would you let the fact that it's hard at the beginning stop you from a lifetime of all the benefits? It's just, yeah. I mean, lately I've been saying to people, because this occurred to me a couple months ago, and when it occurred to me, I went, whoa, this work has a 100% success rate. Like if you actually go into the work of looking at where fear gets you stuck and deciding to practice something different, even if you hear what I suggest and you're like, yeah, that's not for me. Yoga is what I want. You know, okay, I think yoga is accessing the body, but okay. You know, if yoga is what you want, like anything you do to look at your fear and decide to practice something that will help you to become more emotionally resilient, it has a 100% success rate. There's no illness in the world, like clinical illness, for which there's a cure that is a 100% success rate. But with this, it's doing the work, and that's all it is. Now, I say that's all it is like it's so simple. It's not. It's hard. But if you're willing to do the work, it's a 100% success rate. Bet on the odds.
That's incredible. I would love if we could dive in, since this is such a big deal. I would love if we could dive into those four, you know, courage responses, or what did you call them?
The courage habit, the four component parts of it.
Love it. Yeah. I would love it if we could dive into each one of them so that we can give people a really clear understanding of what each of them looks like when they're in the face of fear, so they can have that tangible example in mind to think about how they might apply them. So can we run through each four of them and just give a tangible example?
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. So I'll go with workplace stress, which is a huge thing that I end up talking with people about when
I do a corporate gig
or speaking, you know, to corporate. And so many people are in a position of like, I have a job, I'm not going to leave the job, but I need to manage workplace stress. So you got the workplace stress, you've got too many things coming at you at once, you've got silos between teams, you've got maybe a boss who takes stuff out on other people, or you've got ineffective management and everybody's just trying to like deal with that workplace stress. Well, here, start with first, access the body. Now, with the courage habit tools, you can do any of them. But I personally like to start with accessing the body, because fear is not logical. It's primal. If fear were logical, all any of us would ever have to do is sit down and chirpily go, well, what's the worst case scenario? I can handle that. And then we'd never feel afraid. But if that worked in all cases, then nobody would ever be afraid. So access the body. You got to slow down and you got to look at the feelings of fear, which means you have to recognize the fact that they're happening. You got to feel the fear sensations. And you can do that with basic mindfulness. You can do that with meditation. You can do that with running, CrossFit, downhill skiing, as long as you're doing it with a conscious intention of discharging the stress that you feel. So it's not just go to CrossFit and do the WOD. It's go to CrossFit and be conscious of the fact that, like, today I need to get some aggression out because I'm really tense. And there's a really productive way to do that. And that is to just simply go, okay, let me pay attention to what it is that I'm feeling in my body. I don't need to move it, fix it, change it. Just let me pay attention to it. So that's accessing the body. The second piece would be listening without attachment. So you're listening to what the fear is saying without assuming that it's true or it will always be this way. And my favorite example of what that process can look like would be if you're standing on the street waiting to cross, and somebody who is very clearly drunk walks up to you and says, you've got blue hair. If you know you don't have blue hair, you don't sit there going, gosh, I don't know. Did my hair turn blue overnight? Maybe. Yeah. Like it's not about giving no fucks. Okay. Which is kind of another self-help-ism that I'm not into. When people are like, I don't care what other people think. I'm like, you're a liar. Everybody cares about the hurtful nature of people's criticisms. You might not care to a degree where you take that with you, let it limit you, take it on as something about who you are, but you care that another human being is being hurtful. So listening without attachment is going, okay, when your fear is telling you that this job stress, my boss, they're going to fire me, I have too much to do, I'm never going to meet that deadline, it's listening without attaching. So you listen, it's like, okay, my fear is telling me that my boss is going to fire me. My fear is telling me that I can't get this done. Fear is saying these things. They might not be true, but that's what fear is saying. So slowing down and depersonalizing it, that's listening without attachment. And I often think that listening without attachment, it can be helpful on its own, but it's really powerful when paired with the third part of the courage habit process, which is reframing limiting stories. This is not reciting positive affirmations. This is not the law of attraction. Reframing limiting stories has been studied with multiple populations, as I mentioned, huge in acceptance and commitment therapy, dialectical behavior therapy. And that's taking things like, my boss is going to fire me, and making it, you know, today my boss hasn't fired me. I'm going to show up and do my best. Or, I'm never going to meet that deadline. Let me take a piece of it and see how far I can get. All I can do is the best I can do. That's what reframing limiting stories looks like. So you're not going from, I'll never get this done, to, I can get this done plus 10 other things because I'm a superstar and I believe in myself. Yeah. You know, I mean, if that works for you, great. But for most people that I've ever worked with, in fact, I can't think of one where this has been different. But for most people, it's I feel like I'm lying to myself, like I'm trying to throw glitter on a pile of poop. Reframing limiting stories is a different strategy. It's not bypassing. It's saying, this is hard, but I'm going to do what I can with what I've got to just nudge it in a slightly better direction. And then fourth, for the courage habit process, is reaching out and creating community, because fear really thrives in isolation and it diminishes in community. So if you think that your boss is going to fire you, you got to call up your husband and go, hun, I am just sitting at my desk and I'm panicking. Can you talk me through this? Or you got to talk to a coworker, or you got to listen to a podcast on building psychological strength, right? Like, community isn't always the people who are, like, you know, right next to you. It's also the people you build community with by hiring a coach or listening to people who share your values on a podcast or reading a book. So reaching out and creating community, because that fear cannot continue to grow when you are getting that additional support. So one more time, it's access the body, listen without attachment, reframe limiting stories, reach out and create community. You can do one of them if you want. You can start anywhere. It's not that you have to do it in order. And it's most powerful if you're doing all of them.
That is huge. That is so huge. And so much of that, we're so in line with a lot of the work that we're doing. I just adore it. I love that you mentioned acceptance and commitment therapy. That, you know, for folks who are in the Peak Mind Center, who are, you know, members with us, we don't, you know, present a lot of the work that we do from the perspective of, this is this theory and here's exactly what it's called and whatever. But it, you know, acceptance and commitment therapy and related modalities inform so much of what we do, because they cause such incredible shifts for people. And I just adore the four pieces that you just took us through and how practical and actionable they are, because you can really see, you know, your last example of creating community, right? You can totally see how, as you start to talk through the situation that you're in, or whatever it is that has you afraid, you know, when you're silent about something that you're afraid of, it just allows your mind, your subconscious mind, and even, like, you know, the part of your mind that you're aware of, you know, your conscious mind, it allows it to just, you know, rehash and rehash and rehash something that is very likely not true. it's very likely something that you thought up or made up in your mind. But when you can articulate it out loud, you start to hear it almost from a different perspective. Like, wow, that doesn't actually sound like as big of a deal now that we're talking about it. So I just adore each of those four because they're so actionable, they're so tangible, and you can really see as you walk through that how they would help you move forward even in the situation where you are very afraid. And I just love that.
Yeah. You're not going to get rid of the fear. The fear is going to be there. It's just have it ride sidecar, not be in the driver's seat steering which way you go or whether or not you put on the gas or the brakes. And you know, recognizing your particular fear patterns. I think we all do all of them, the perfectionism, people-pleasing, pessimism, and self-sabotage. It's just usually one hooks you more. And so being able to recognize, oh, this is the fear pattern. This is what it looks like. This is how it shows up. And then go, I want to consciously choose something different. That's what it looks like in the moment. And it is hard stuff. It is hard stuff to learn how to become more patient or to decide that you want to adopt a more positive attitude or, you know, to do something different behaviorally. But again, the hard is temporary. It's just so temporary when weighed against the benefit of the rest of your life. And speaking of different therapeutic modalities and geeking out on this stuff, I mean, I fancy myself something of an existentialist, which means that I actually like use in my life this very real fact, which is that all of us are going to die.
Oh man, like you just went down a big rabbit hole for me.
Yeah.
I mean, love you.
Here's the thing. Like we're all going to die and we don't know how much time we have. And at least to me, I'm really, you know, I have a daily practice that I call on fire and on purpose because that's how I want to live. I want to live on fire and on purpose. And I don't ever want to get to the end of my life and go, well, I could have done this thing, but you know, Netflix and chill. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? All the languages to learn and places to travel, books to read, books to write, friends to meet, dishes to taste, love to exchange, sex to have. You want Netflix and chill rather than looking at your comfort zone and going, maybe I want something different. Now, a comfort zone is not altogether bad. Everybody has one. They're actually part of psychological health to have touchstones in your life where it's like, okay, yeah, this is my time to just like be purposeless. Okay. I mean, I do Netflix and chill in my own life too, but it's not the bulk of my day. And that's the thing that I really want to get people on fire around is that, you know, for anybody who is living a life where you're just doing the job, where you dot the I's and cross the T's and it doesn't light you up, maybe you're not going to, you know, ditch that job and go travel the world. But hey, okay, in the job that you have, how can you show up as a leader? How can you make someone else's day great? And I mean, it sounds really geeky and silly, and I get that. But once you get turned on to it, it's just such a more alive way of living. I was just talking with someone the other day about this game that I play every time I'm at an airport. And it's the game, I had never talked about it before until she and I happened to talk about it. I was like, oh, so there's this game I play. In my head, it's how can I make someone's day today? Because you go to an airport and basically everyone's stressed out. Parents with kids are stressed out. People just got off their flight and they really got to pee and they're waiting in a long line at the bathroom. Missed connections, delayed things, the flight attendants who are doing double duty at the, you know, booking desks, you know, they're dealing with stuff too. And so I just kind of take it on as like, how can I go a little slower in the TSA line? Not slower as in holding someone up, but slower as in being present. How can I like just flash a megawatt smile at that TSA agent who has probably had people grumbling at her all day long? How do I, you know, I carry stickers in my purse for kids who are having meltdowns. I let somebody else go ahead. It's just like, how do you make someone's day today? And when you start doing these little things all over the place, it's so much more enlivening in terms of a way to live. And that's, you know, what I mean, I guess, when I'm talking about You know, none of us ever get as much time on this earth as we want or deserve. We are all going to die. Make it count. And you can make it count in so many ways that are ordinary. It doesn't have to be this big, flashy, I sell everything I own and I live out of a backpack and I get to the top of Mount Everest. It can actually be a really juicy, alive, courageous life in ways that might look ordinary to everybody else, might not seem all that appealing on paper. But those are the people I admire, frankly. Those are the people I want to be around. Those are the people that I emulate or want to emulate. The people who are just going, hey, in my little old hometown, how do I make a difference? And in my little old life, how do I show up as best I can?
That is wonderful. I could literally talk, like, you hit on two soapbox topics for me that we could do another 2 hours of the show on. And it is every bit of self-control that I have to not go down those.
We can have a whole episode that's basically like, you're going to die someday. Here's how to live it up.
Yeah. Yeah. In the previous life of this podcast, it's episode 39 and 40, if you want to hear. It's just me screaming basically about that very topic and why people should care and why that alone, I run a program twice a year called Life Design Lab, and that fundamental piece, time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet. You don't have time to waste and don't get to the end in regret. That is the catalyst that we begin that program with, because if you can get your head around that and not get too scared and push it away, if you can actually go down that rabbit hole, your life opens up. The courage you get from understanding how important it is that you step out of that comfort zone, that's some serious stuff. But again, I would go down a rabbit hole and I can't do that right now. as we're wrapping up, I have two more questions for you and then I want you to give us some information about where to find you. Question number one, I would love for you to give us your definition of psychological strength. What does it mean to you to be psychologically strong?
Well, I think it's courage. And I think that it's the courage to let the truth of who you are on the inside be how you actually live on the outside. Which is very hard to do. And yes. I think that applies to everything from being real about your sexual orientation and your values and your big vision and your weaknesses and all of that. And like actually allowing that to live on the outside of you. So you're showing up, really, it's you're showing up in all your humanity. Mm. That's really what it is.
I love that. And a couple of top tips, if, you know, for people who they're coming to this podcast because they want to become more psychologically strong, they want to build that resilience and courage. You've given us so much already, but, you know, really, if there's one thing or a couple of things that if you're going to tell somebody, go do this now, what's your top tip for becoming psychologically strong?
I'm going to give two.
Love it.
One is daily practice. And to me, not having, I call it a daily practice. It doesn't have to be a morning practice, but something that involves presence. It doesn't have to be meditation. It just whatever involves presence, because to me, given all that we know about mindfulness, presence, meditation, whatever you want to call it, and the benefits it has for you mentally, physically, your immune system, all of that, to not do it is like being really hungry. And there's like a banquet table of food in front of you. And you're like, you know, no time today. No time for that. And that just is, I mean, to me, I know someone's really taking their life seriously in the best possible way when they have some kind of a daily practice. So that's one. And it doesn't have to be long. I'm always gabbing about the Insight Timer. It's a free app. You know, you don't have to go off to an ashram somewhere. Free app. I use it every day. And then the other thing I'd say is believe in the power of 5 minutes. You know, people really have a tendency to go, okay, there's a lot of research that goes into the preparatory phase of change for people, whether that's literally research or just queuing a lot of your friends up and going, what do you think? Or debating about it mentally. And it's just like all that time trying to research it and contemplate it and all that, like just try putting 5 minutes in whatever direction you're trying to go. Mm. 5 minutes on the novel is better than no minutes on the novel. If you have a 20-minute argument with your partner and 5 minutes of that argument, you do your damnedest to really use I statements and not have it be pot shots, that's better than no minutes. 5 minutes of meditation is better than no minutes of meditation. 5 minutes of walking is better than no minutes of walking. If you think about it, it doesn't make logical sense what humans do when we tell ourselves, well, you know, I don't really have like a good half hour carved out for that. So, you know, I'm just going to do it tomorrow. That makes no sense. You know, like if you really want to get more artistic, creative expression in your life, 5 minutes of drawing is better than no minutes of drawing. It's just believe in the power of 5 minutes.
Oh, man, we really could sit here for 2 more hours. I'm just dying. I have about 700 more questions that I wish I could ask you because you are just a wealth of knowledge, and not just the ability to recite theories and facts, but you are a wealth of practical knowledge that is exactly the stuff that will change people's lives, exactly the stuff that will help them find. I mean, one of my biggest goals with people is to help them find what that actual true potential is, not the one that's inside the comfort zone, but what is it? Like, how good could you actually be? How big could you actually be? How much could you actually, you know, attain if you stepped out a little bit more? And man, the stuff that you are sharing is precisely the set of techniques that would help people get to that point. So this has just been awesome. I would be crazy if I didn't ask you where people can find you and where they can find your book, because this has been wonderful, and it will be, it would just be so wonderful if you could help point us in the direction of where to learn more about you and your work.
Well, The Courage Habit is my book, and it's on Amazon. It's at booksellers, Barnes & Noble, all that. So it's out there in the world, and there are some free resources that go with the book that you can get by going to yourcourageouslife.com/begin. You can find me as Kate Courageous on all social media channels except Facebook. Facebook, I'm Your Courageous Life. And other than that, you know, just bopping in there, Kate Courageous or Kate Swoboda, and you're going to find podcasts and articles and teleseminars and all that stuff. I love to have these conversations, and it's really been an honor to be here today. So thank you for having me.
Kate, I can't thank you enough. This is just amazing, and I am absolutely thrilled. So thank you so much for being with us on Building Psychological Strength.
It's a simple fact that nearly everyone in the world could benefit from building psychological strength, but not everyone will put in the time and effort to do so. But today you did. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Building Psychological Strength. Now, if you're interested in building the mental toughness, confidence, and resilience you need to thrive through life's ups and downs, visit us at www.peakmindpsychology.com. Also, if there's someone in your life who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you yourself found this episode valuable, meaning if you took away even one insight that you can use to build psychological strength in your own life, we would so appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. The thing is, the more ratings and reviews we have, the easier it is to get this powerful and important content out to the people who need to hear it. Remember, your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. So choose wisely, my friend, and I'll see you next time on Building Psychological Strength.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.